This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Mel Dominguez, owner of Galería Mitotera and artist. Welcome, Mel.
Thanks for having me.
Mel, could you tell us about Galería Mitotera and how it came to be?
It's actually located at 1802 South 4th Avenue, and it's across the street from one of the most famous restaurants here in town. That's Minidito, and the others are, you know, Guillermo's and whatnot. But the way it came to be, it was from the simple fact of wanting to put on shows and uplift other artists that were underrepresented or up and coming, or in general, people of color, you know, queer. And to also bring guests from out of the, Tucson, from all over the country, to talk to the people here in Tucson about their books, their artwork, their struggles, their stories as artists. So we wanted to really have a space that we can bring other people to share with the local community.
Do you have any favorite guests that you've hosted so far?
Well, they're all very, you know, very special to me. But it was actually really awesome to have Isabel Quintero. She came through, and she's done a series of children's books and young adult books. And it was really nice to have her come and read the children's books because, I think this is partly one of your memories too. But thinking back, it was really nice to have her come through because she addressed a lot of different things, even though she was speaking about children books. So that was really cool. But there's a lot of them. I mean, we've even had Mi Vida from Los Angeles, and we actually grew up in the same vicinity for many, many years. And we actually ended up knowing each other through a mutual job in Los Angeles on Melrose and Fairfax. And when I left LA, I didn't have any contact with her or anything like that, but she ended up opening her own business, her own boutique in Highland Park. And so when I got my spot, we were actually able to invite her over and have a pop-up with her at my shop. So it was really neat because growing up in the same neighborhood, she'd always see me walking around, and I knew some of her friends and things like that. So to know each other as adults and to support each other was really huge. And I had no idea, but there's quite a few scenes where you could see the actual show, Mi Vida, the cast members are wearing some of her outfits.
I understand, Mel, that you have not let COVID-19 slow you down in the sense of having guests, having Galería Mitotera guests through the virtual art chats.
Yes, because of the pandemic, we were just like, we felt super responsible to not have anybody be at our shop during that time. And so during this pause that we were all taking, we invited our guests, the underrepresented people of color. We invited them to do interviews just like this one and talk more about their art, where they got their art from, their inspiration. And it's really nice too, because a lot of times when interviewing these folks, I learn new things about them that I had no idea about. And it's just a really nice thing to continue to support these people because right now, I think that art is really a therapy for a lot of people, whether they knew it or not. And this is a great way to support system for them.
But for everybody right now, right? Because there is a lot for us to process and get through. So having an artistic tool with which to do that and analyze our moment, I think is really powerful for lots of people. Mel, I want to back up a little bit and kind of ask you, I think that your arrival in Tucson and it really explains a bit about Galería Mitotera and what your dreams for a community are. What was it like when you came to Tucson in 2007? And what was your first impression of the city and of South Tucson in particular?
Well, I'm coming from a big city like Los Angeles that has neighborhood after neighborhood, city after city. And then when I actually came into Tucson, I was reminded that I would always pass through Tucson, but at night on our way to El Paso. So I'd never really even seen Tucson. And so when we got here, I was really taken back. And I was like, uh-oh, what did I do? Because I came in the middle of the summer and I had no understanding that, you know what, during the summer, people already know they don't hang out during the day. They actually hang out at night, all these things. And what I really thought, and it sounds crazy, but you know that show Walking Dead? I thought it was like that. I was like, man, there's nothing but zombies up in here. And I was kind of, I'm like, did I make a huge mistake? And I was getting really worried, but
I gotta say though too, I moved to Tucson in 2005 and I had a similar experience because that was pre the whole like downtown boom. And I had this idea that I really wanted to live downtown. And I got here and I was like, wait, there is no downtown. It's completely dead after 5 o'clock. There was not any of that like movement and, you know, the kind of bar restaurant scene that we have today did not exist.
Nope. And some of the places you'd go in and you're like, how are they still open? You know, but if you look at that downtown space now, I mean, there's most of us that couldn't afford to live there right now.
Right. Totally true. So you had this Walking Dead moment. How did you get beyond that?
Oh my Lord. Well, I was also looking for art jobs because that was my career. That was my profession in LA. So I looked for, you know, galleries and things like that. And I'm not even sure that they had First Saturdays even at that time. But I was looking and trying to meet people and find people. And really, I started to understand that, well, wow, everybody knows everybody here, and try to figure it out. So the only job I could really find immediately to sustain us down here during that time was to tow truck. And that was fun, except then I started learning that the streets, it could be the same street, but it changes names 3 times. And I was like, what? And the numbers that there's both East and West number streets, like 6th and 6th. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what's going on here? But in that tow trucking business, it was different because we actually had there was a contract with the Border Patrol. And I thought it was cool. Like with the sheriff's department, we'd pick up accident scenes and whatnot. And I was like, cool. Like, this is neat. I'm driving a big truck, a big flatbed bed and, you know, doing my thing. But then when the Border Patrol, things started coming through, it was disheartening because we were seizing vehicles from people that were on their way to work. It was not about all of these stories like, oh, they're bringing drugs or they're not paying into the system. And when in fact, it was the exact opposite. And it was really awful because it wasn't just one pickup. We did many of these seizures, you know, and you'd go into the tow yards where sometimes it was like, so since it's considered illegal, they would take it back to the sheriff's department. They have a huge yard, or the Border Patrol, and they have a whole nother yard. And these yards were full of running vehicles that most likely were paid for cash. They had tools inside them. One of them had brand new laundry, you know, like fresh laundry and things. So I was, after seeing that, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I quit. And it just happened to, this might be the anniversary. It was on 4th of July that I quit, so.
Good day to quit.
Right?
When you were tow trucking, did that take you into South Tucson? When did your kind of relationship with South Tucson begin?
Well, yeah, you know what? As a tow trucker, we'd go all over the place, but it still seemed very closed and shut and really not. I didn't see it because I didn't have any ties. Like, I didn't go to high school here. I didn't have any family here. So I didn't know a lot of the history and things like that. And being a, you know, in general, mitotera, I go and discover things on my own. I like going into shops and think, you know, looking at a street and wondering, why did they put a wiggle in the road? And then I would hear stories from people passing by, you know, and I'd be like, hey, what's up? You don't know about this, you know? And actually, I met another artist, and he shared the fact that the city actually made that wiggle in the road because there was a lot of speeding in that area, and that they made that wiggle road so that people could slow down and really enjoy some of the restaurants that were in that area. And so it was neat to find out things, but it was also a really big question mark for me about space. Like, why aren't there more galleries, or why aren't there more like studio galleries, or, you know, like shops, like boutiques and things? Cause I felt like, the city of South Tucson was really cool. Like, I was like, 1.2 square miles. Like, that's interesting. And to look at their walking paths, you know, House of Neighborly Services, the JBYC, I was looking at all these things and the people around them, and just with a big question mark, like, where's the people that reinvest in the city, or where's the, you know? So I started getting involved in those ways. But by that time, I was already starting to paint again.
So your paintings started making their way into the landscape of Tucson at large too.
One of the first things that brought me back to starting to paint was that experience in having towed someone's seized vehicle. And I created a drawing called Why Am I Being Stopped? Is it my Selena t-shirt? Is it my wrestling mask? And I was taken back to Los Angeles to create a limited edition run of that piece. And when I came back, I knew that whatever I was going to be doing, my responsibility as an artist, it wasn't about the money. It was about the mission and the education. It was just in my mind, like, I needed more people to know our people's history, and to know a lot of things that were actually happening currently in Tucson. Because a lot of times I was like, wow, you know, I feel like Tucson might be like behind, you know, like by 2 to almost 10 years. I mean, sometimes I felt that way, you know. But then when I looked at the university and the science happening around in Tucson, I was like, they're actually forward thinking, because the Biosphere 2 was repurchased by the University of Arizona. And because of my drawings and my working with young people, I was selected to be part of a residency that took me to the Biosphere 2. And I was able to talk to a lot of the scientists there working on climate change. And that was under a different administration, and which I miss so much because of their leadership. That's Obama's leadership. And when I got all this knowledge about climate change, they're like, Mel, what are you going to go do? And I'm like, I'm going to go tell all the kids who can't even make it up here to the Biosphere 2. Because some of those kids, sometimes they don't even make it to Tumamoc. And that's in town. So my paintings and my murals, they started to have a different effect, because a lot of either the counselors or the teachers or somebody knew that I had that experience. And they said, Mel, you work great with people. You work great with kids. Can you do something for us? And one of the first ones that really got me started was working with Moses over at Monzo. And that whole mural on the outside that's by their garden area is a visual that was painted by the children. Because that's the big part of what I do too, is the murals that I have been painting with the schools, I haven't done them by myself. I've actually asked the what they call young scholars now to participate in the mural painting. So there's an opportunity to not just teach them how to paint, but then I get to tell them all the insights, like, you know, a concrete heat island, you know, that Phoenix is a concrete heat island. And here in Tucson, we have little pockets of microclimates and things like that. So I had all these opportunities to just talk to the students. And since that happened, then I had, well, not just me, but even Moses had the opportunity to start sharing that knowledge with other schools and start building gardens and teaching children through those art projects. And it just started building and building, and technically hasn't stopped. My last mural that was painted in a garden teaching children this was at Carrillo Elementary, which is right in the heart or downtown area of Tucson.
Mel, you have a really great vision for community and specific to South Tucson, and Galleria Mitotera is part of that. Can you tell me about this dream that you have?
Oh boy, the big dream. Well, back to that 1.2 square miles. Logistically, that's nothing. So my idea, and now it's that idea is still morphing because it's strategy based on the pandemic and what we can do. But the big dream is really to keep the people who live there now, to keep them there, and so that they're not gentrified. And also to better have the residents who are still there to get a greater understanding of what some of the terms might be, because like beautification versus gentrification, it's a touchy subject. But I want to go through and I clean everything up. I want to reinvest in the community by making it the economy be arts and culture. So the culture part is already surrounding me. We have the casino ballroom. We have all the eateries, and there's a list of them. We can go through them, but I want to keep everybody there, and I want to use the arts as the economic part that helps sustain those residents. And what I mean by that, I'm going to find out all these walls that we can get permission for, and then I want to get all the artists that I know, the contemporary artists that are labeled as graffiti artists, and get them to be art leaders in the community. And take these different walls and do works of art, like mural all over the 1.2 square miles, all the boundaries, all the inside. And I wanted to make like a tourist attraction for all the tourists that come throughout the year for different reasons. Some come for the mariachi festival. Some come for the gem show. Some come because we have so much sun and they come from places that are mostly cold. I've even had people visit because they're cyclists, and if it's cold in their area and they can't be out, they come and take like over 100 miles of biking that we have out here, like on the loop and whatnot. I also want to get the old Pueblo trolley that is within the city limits of city of South Tucson on 4th and 36th. They refurbished these old buses, and we want to put that back to work where we can even get somebody employed being the microphone holder and telling people, you know, hey, this tile work was done at Las Artes, or this new mural was produced by, you know, this group of folks. And then, you know, whomever's visiting, they can get dropped off at whatever eatery they want to stop at. And my big dream is that it actually works, and that we can actually keep folks in the city of South Tucson without being gentrified and be happy doing art.
I think it's a great plan.
Me too.
No, South Tucson has a specific demographic, and I think that you've done a really great job too of bringing artists and art exhibits that are specific to Latinx concerns and migrant concerns. Could you tell us about the crosses?
Oh yeah, well, coming from Los Angeles and having, you know, experienced Day of the Dead and it's the way the procession and the way it takes place, I had never seen it outside of Los Angeles. And when I came to Tucson and I witnessed how they celebrate, they called it something different. And they really made it a holiday of their own by calling it All Souls, in which I understand that now it's more diverse and it's for everybody, which I thought Day of the Dead was for everybody. But then there was that bigger struggle because I had been a tow trucker experiencing that SB 1070 bill and people being actually, you know, collected and put in prison because of it. And then because I'm an artist and I've been involved in different projects, I was invited to visit the Pima County coroner. And so our discussion was because of the climate change and how climate change affected the desert. We got more extreme heat. And the coroner actually described the border like when you go to Tijuana and you go to San Diego, you look at the border, it lowers into the ocean. It doesn't get taller. It lowers. But when you go east, like coming towards our deserts, it gets taller. But then in the middle of the desert, it gets smaller again. And the reasoning behind that is because where it gets smaller in the desert, it actually is beyond the extremes we feel here in Tucson, on top of the fact that there's no water for people to stop and drink, or to even some of them to even get rest under some shade. And so at the at the Piedmont County Coroner, the deputy, he actually showed us a map that he created due to their findings. And their he goes, you know, there's three big red dots on the map. And he said one of those dots is the size of 9/11 with that same size of loss of life. And he goes, and we designate those three dots as mass disasters. So we have three, the size of three 9/11s on our border. And a lot of those bodies, some of them, they're, you know, unrecognizable. Some of them, they're just bones. Some of them, the bodies, because they're in the sun, they look like leather. And the deputy was even explaining to us that they use a black light to identify some of these folks, using the black light to see if they have any identifying markings like tattoos. And so the lead in the tattoos will brighten up when that black light's on them. And so as an artist, I was like, the hell with the climate change? Like, there's that many dead people. And I know that, you know, one of the times that the All Souls was going, that they asked the community to create floats, or, you know, that acknowledge the loved ones or the people who have died. And they have done one for the folks lost in the desert. But I didn't feel like it was enough. I felt like people were taking it not even like seriously, like how others were, like they had actually lost a loved one. There's people that were dressing up like if it was Halloween and getting wasted, and like if it was a big old party, and which it is, but there's still some, you know, real loss of life. People that are really crying and they're longing to see their family. And it was disturbing for me. And it was just so disturbing. I stopped participating because I actually go to be there in celebration of my lost loved ones. So I just couldn't see it anymore. On top of the fact that there's so many other people who don't even know where their loved ones, their bodies, their remains are. And so I had been talking to Humane Borders. They collect the names and they write them every year. They make the whole crosses. They nail the pieces of wood together, and then the next person paints the crosses white, and the next person writes the name. Like if we have a name, it might sometimes, well, most of them say desconocido or desconocida, which means unknown. Derechos Humanos is the one that puts that together. But they've been doing this for a lot. I want to say since before 2005. I mean, you could even see the surges that kind of match with the climate change. Like we had extreme heat in 2005, and well, guess what? There was, you know, more death in that year, you know, and or more people were found in this year, and it is really intense. And what they do is they go and they would put them in front of San Javier. They would have a whole ceremony in the morning. And that, even that was heavy, you know, because they bring them in bins and we unload them from a truck, and that, you know, and then we make a whole big circle based on by year. There's just so many and it's so heavy, but then they get put back. They get put away after that. And I was like, I need to do something different, especially since it's so evident that there's some people that they might be racist and still participate in Dia de los Muertos. In 2005, you couldn't walk into a Michael's and find a Day of the Dead, you know, paper plates or stickers or you name it, or t-shirts. You wouldn't find anything like that. But if you go today, yes, you will. You will find it even in a Disney cartoon collection. You'll find it, you know, except it's called Coco, because people actually fought for that, because we were like, wait, hell no. We're not going to sell no copyrights to Disney using Dia de los Muertos, especially because we have this issue. So when I actually was able to obtain the space that is Galeria Mitotera, I was like, I'm not going to do an altar inside or do artwork. I just can't, not this year and not with this space, especially because there's a lot of people that they might go and eat at Minidito, and it might be from Kansas, North Carolina, or even from here, from Phoenix. And they won't go into the shop. Sometimes they won't even acknowledge me as a person, but they'll go and they'll eat Mexican food. And so I said, you know what? This year, I'm going to string up from top to bottom as many crosses as I can. And so I actually had some help from a local young man who had just got out of prison, and he didn't have any life, like real like working skills, or because he went in as a young man and he came out as an adult male, and he had nothing. And so, and on top of, you know, South Tucson is still like, I don't know about, you know, jobs in general for people like that. But so I was like, dude, help me, you know, and he helped me. He helped me a lot, and he helped me with the other projects, but he helped me put those up. And it was a really hard experience because they weren't just crosses. For me and him, it was actually like people. And the fact that we had that many people on our wall, and something very interesting happened. And that is that once they were hung on this fishing line, it was so delicate, hanging from the top, the wind would blow and you could hear the knocking of the crosses, and it sounded like bones. And that was heavy too. And we were kind of, me and my partner, we were worried that, because we had some problems, not big ones, but they're just little things, you know, like some of the, I'm not sure what the politically correct term for it is, but the people that are walking the streets and whatnot, sometimes they might be, you know, mentally ill or distressed, and they might get the urge to, they've pulled my plants and things like that, and they've tagged the wall once or twice, or they leave needles and drugs behind, but nobody messed with the crosses, and that was much appreciated for even the people that have nothing. To be so considerate to the crosses was amazing. Having the crosses up, I mean, a lot of people, they would stop and they would look and they would read the names, and they would, you know, they would see what we were doing. And it was pretty heavy, but it was awesome, because I wanted them to face the fact that they might still even be voting Republican, but like to eat Mexican food. And I hate putting the pressure on the party, but the fact of the matter is that's what it is. And they say it comes down to the law. And for me, it comes down to humanity. And so it made people think. So I hope it did its job. And I feel that it did. And we had Colibri that does the DNA testing for the bodies found, or the bones found, or any little piece of remnants. And they connect the people, the DNA, to the people who are living. And some of those people were their family sponsors who were living either in Arizona or as far as Chicago. And so we had them build an altar. We had Humane Borders and Derechos Humanos. They're the only ones that did altars in my space. And we included some art, but we were trying to be very sensitive about all things. But that was one of my most important shows.
Mel, I really feel you on this, because I also have been involved in migrant advocacy for like the past 9, almost 10 years. And I think that for a long time, to myself and other people for sure, it's been kind of maddening to be aware of all the deaths happening in the desert and of the violence of our immigration system, and not really being able to get a lot of traction. Or when you talk to people from other parts of the country who are not from the borderlands, they have no idea, or they don't know anything about it. And we continue to have this kind of violence in the immigration system. It's even more ramped up, actually. And no sign of immigration reform, no sign of political traction, and not enough outrage amongst the populace. I'm really excited to see the kind of mainstreamization of Black Lives Matters. And I wonder, when is it going to be that migrant lives matter too?
That's exactly how I feel. Because there's even people that take it upon themselves to go and monitor the desert, and they call themselves Minutemen. And there's nobody policing their behavior.
Yeah, there's a lot of just kind of Wild West stuff that continues to happen in our region. Mel, I want to back up even further and ask you about growing up in LA and your artistic trajectory.
You know, I've always, how long was I in Los Angeles? For like 27 years growing up. And I grew up, I was the only kid for like the first 6 years of my life. And so I'd spend time with my grandparents and things like that. But it was interesting because I loved my grandfather. He had a, you know, big beard, and he looked like Moses from the Bible, you know, and that was like my first introduction to art, was like these pieces of art inside the Bible. And I was like, wow, because it told the story. Like my grandpa could, you know, tell me stories, but looking at the picture, I could really understand it a little bit better. And then I would also wake up with him to, you know, he was going to work. He was a master sawyer at a lumber yard. And so he'd wake up really early and I'd wake up with him. I'm like, grandpa, you know, and I'd follow him into the kitchen and, you know, he'd serve himself, you know, me some cereal and he'd had some breakfast and he'd turn on the TV and Popeye was on TV and we'd be watching it and he'd laugh at the same thing I was laughing at. And it's strange because I was only 3 years old, but I understood that through visuals, like we could talk to anybody at any age. I was like, wow, this is what I need to do. I thought that was what I was supposed to be learning instead of reading. I was like, yeah, I need to learn how to draw. Like more people understand drawings than reading, you know, like some people don't know English or Spanish, you know? So I was starting to figure that out, but then I would also, you know, ride along with my parents because my dad worked at the same lumber yard, but he was a truck driver. And I would be in the back seat of their vehicle. And I was a super quiet kid, which they enjoyed a lot, of course, because I was not that much trouble. But I would look and just, I would look at all the concrete, all the buildings, all the trees, because there was different shapes in these spaces. And I was always like thinking to myself and then driving all the way up to his job, you'd see graffiti and you'd see murals. And there was two different techniques, you know, like there was a whole story in a mural and it was telling the story of our people or our civil rights or something, you know. And I, as a young kid, that was my entertainment. I was like, this is awesome. Except for the graffiti artist was the person that was most attainable. Like I can actually, if I could see him or her, I'd walk up and be like, hey, what's up? And they're like, what do you want, little kid? You know, until there was one time where I met, and I was older by that time. I was must have been like 16 or something, but I had met a graffiti artist and he was in a popular or more recognized graffiti crew called UTI, which is under the influence, but they meant like under the influence of like education, like, you know what I mean? Not like alcohol or drugs. And I was like, that's dope, man. I like this. And he started to tell me about EZLN and what they were doing. And I was like, that's dope. Like they're claiming their land. Like they came down on the day after New Year's, like because everybody was going to be drunk and they'd be able to take over. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. And autonomy and just all of those things. And even that they had women leaders. I was like, wow, this is good stuff, you know? And it just really affected me in different ways, that the ways that I tell stories, and how I tell them in my artwork and how I support others as well. It made a change for me because not only did this artist do, you know, like graffiti art illegally, but this artist was actually an illustrator as well. And he taught me that like, if I got really good and I, you know, honed in on my craft and like skill of drawing and telling these stories, that I could do that for someone as a business to illustrate their designs and their stories. And I was like, I'm all over that. And so it really gave me the extra encouragement and boost to really do something with my artistic skills.
Could you tell us about your next thing, Dear Moon?
So it's hashtag Dear Moon, like if you're writing a letter to the moon. It's a project that is being put on by SpaceX and a Japanese billionaire who's an art enthusiast. And they're hoping to do this launch in the year 2023 with a select cohort of 8 artists of different mediums and skills and whatnot. And they're supposed to go and travel and circle or orbit the moon, so you'll be able to see the dark side of the moon. I'm like, I want to be one of the 8 selected artists. So I'm not sure if I'm young enough to do it or if I'm all wasted already. Like, you got too many problems, Mel, you can't go. But they're going to be launching on this thing called the BFR, the Big Falcon Rocket. And it's supposed to launch from Florida. And it takes about a week to go around the moon and come back. And we'll be landing somewhere in Africa on that coastline there. So all of it is just an interest to me for so many reasons. I mean, I don't think that NASA has ever offered something like this. So that's one. And then two, it's about artists. And they're selecting artists because they're doing what we did here in Tucson, Arizona. And that is, when there was a big discussion like climate change to be discussed, they invited the artist to come through because they knew that the artist was going to go back and tell the story to everybody. And that's been my biggest job with climate change too. And then now with the space travel, I'm hoping that they select me because that's what we're going to be talking about, is space travel. And sometimes it's just about being in the stratosphere. That's what they're proposing, faster travel, you zoom up and zoom down. But I'm like, some of it's really intense because I was alive when that Space Challenger, Space Shuttle Challenger blew up. And I'm like, that part gets me scared. But at the same time, I'm like, but I would be done. You wouldn't have to worry about me anymore. and being a person of color who's queer, it would mean a bunch, because then it's about inclusion, you know?
It would be, it's such a great story, right? From the south side of Tucson to the moon and back.
Right? Imagine all the kids that I talk to. The bigger thing for me is actually having those kids get excited and knowing that they could be the next one. You know, especially if they know somebody like me that I can do it, then hell, they can do it too.
Mel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. You gave me a lot of things to think about myself.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to the full-length podcast, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Support for Artist Stories is provided by Benjamin Supply, presenting a full spectrum of hardware and plumbing fixtures for kitchen and bath in their gallery, Tucson, offering national and local art in both the Tucson Warehouse and Transfer Buildings on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. With products available at will call, they are currently open by phone at 777-7000 and at benjaminsupply.com or gallerytucson.com.